Welcome back to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. As the creator and host of this podcast, it is critical to me to convey to you, our listeners, how much positive power you have inside of you right now, in this very moment. You have the power to change your life. And that could be changing it, like I had to back when I was 23, from a place of kind of being on a road to nowhere, kind of feeling hopeless and stuck, to being on a road to somewhere desirable, someplace good. It could also be changing your life from good to great. And it could also be changing your life from great to, I cannot believe how incredibly blessed and lucky I am to get to live this life. You have that power inside of you, and that is all you need to get started. The rest, you can learn along the way. I started this podcast as a way to bring stories of hope and triumph, as well as resources that will help you along that journey, whatever that might be, whatever your starting place is, or whatever your destination might be. My sincerest hope is that you find it valuable. So let's go. Here is this week's episode. My guest today has been a successful business owner for over 30 years. He now runs a consulting organization helping businesses and social ventures bring emotional intelligence to the workplace. His firm is a preferred partner with 6 Seconds EQ Network. You might remember that I interviewed Josh Freeman, who is the CEO of 6 Seconds, recently on this podcast. He is also the North America Regional Network co-director of 6 Seconds. He is trained as a spiritual and emotional intelligence coach, and he is also a professional certified coach with the International Coach Federation. His name is Jim Vay, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Jim, thank you so much for joining me.
And I'm excited to be with you.
Well, thank you. And I'm excited for this conversation because I know that you've hinted that there's something kind of intriguing about your story, your journey to emotional intelligence. So would you just share a little bit about who you are and what led you in that direction?
Well, I am multifaceted. For most of my life, I've owned businesses. I've had some fairly large businesses. And I've also been a spiritual director for about the last 35 years.
Wow.
And I went into prison with an international prison ministry for 30 years.
Wow.
And I worked on death row, and I worked in maximum security prisons with people. And spiritual direction in and of itself is not enough to help people with their journey. And I'll say that for this reason. When you try to talk to people about just a spiritual without emotional intelligence, it's two-dimensional at best. So I knew something was missing by the way that the residents inside the institutions were talking with me. So I was doing something else, and it was on a podcast, and I saw Josh Freeman from the 6 Seconds Intelligence Network speaking, and I said, I got to learn about that. So about 14 years ago, I called him up, and I said, I have to learn about emotional intelligence. He said, come on down.
Of course, and so I started Josh would.
And I found, yeah, of course he did. And as I was learning, I found out that the emotional intelligence with the spiritual intelligence gave me texture and color, rather than just a black and white outcome.
Wow. And can you give me an example of what that looked like, how it changed?
Well, when you look at people two-dimensionally, you don't see all the things that are happening underneath. You don't really totally see the person. And so they're like a cutout.
Oh, that's a great image.
Sometimes we might even just be doing things to check boxes.
Yeah.
And when you add the two, emotional intelligence, spiritual intelligence, unless you're totally blind, you can't be just checking boxes anymore because you start feeling what's going on with that person with a deep sense of empathy.
Yeah. Wow. Do you still do the work in prisons and on death
row? I do not anymore. I did my time. Thank you.
No pun intended. I'm fascinated by that. What led you to do that type of work?
I'm from inner city Detroit.
Okay.
And my parents decided that they wanted to involve my brother and I at a very early age in the 60s to start crossing the racial barriers all by ourselves. And I learned about emotional intelligence from some of the greatest people in the equity movement that have ever been.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I started thinking about it from that point forward. What does it mean to be involved with other people? And wow. I didn't have the answers.
Yeah.
Emotional intelligence wasn't something that was talked about with everybody.
No.
So all I did was, okay, so who am I? What am I? And the closest thing that I could find at the time was going down the spiritual path. So that's why I did that first.
Okay. Wow. What did you learn by doing that, 30 years of work in prisons and with death row inmates?
Well, you may find this, some of your listeners and watchers may find this controversial. But I think that in the United States, primarily because we were in many countries, we are a country that does tributive justice rather than restorative justice.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is we warehouse people in tributive justice. Okay. It's such a huge, huge industry, both private and public, that people don't really want to get rid of it. And so with restorative justice, it means how can we help people that have paid their price integrate back into society?
Yeah.
And since I did that with my company and I used to hire ex-offenders. In fact, at one time I had so many ex-offenders, I had to hire an ex-warden. True story.
Oh my goodness.
But I also found out that it takes about 12 people a year to help one person reintegrate.
No way.
Yeah. It's not an easy program. It's not easy to do.
No. I've heard that from other people that it's really, and it doesn't take long. Like it doesn't take a long prison sentence before it becomes difficult to reintegrate.
I was in one prison in Ohio, and it was very interesting. And this is something that I don't think people really get. I'd been going into prison so long that I had my own pass. I could walk around out in the yard with nobody with me. And everybody knew me there, so it was okay. And I was walking out in the compound with 3,000 inmates walking around.
Whoa.
And I recognized something very interesting, and that is that they were truly living in a city. There is a city within the compound, and they have the whole thing set up to be able to understand each other and talk to each other and be with each other. Man. And they have to do that because they're in such close quarters. If they didn't have that kind of system set up, they would be in trouble.
Yeah. Wow. That must have been fascinating and, I don't know, disturbing sometimes, I would imagine.
Well, would you consider it disturbing if a grandfather, a father, and a son were all in the same institution at the same time?
Yeah.
So think about this from an emotional intelligence standpoint. Trauma not transformed is trauma transferred.
Ooh, trauma not transformed?
Correct. Is trauma transferred. And not only do people that get into trouble with the law go through this, but when we are working with our children, we are working with other people, we work as a business leader.
Yes.
We can perpetrate trauma on the people that we're dealing with if we don't know our own stuff.
Yep. Wow. I'm thinking about how that would apply with parents and their children. There's so many ways it would apply.
Yeah. So it depends on what kind of discipline you have in the home.
Yeah.
It depends on whether you're nurture or something else.
Right. So with that, I love that. How does emotional intelligence help to transform the trauma?
When you start becoming aware of the things that are going on with you, you have to make a decision. The decision is, am I going to ignore it and just be the person I've been in the past? Or am I going to want to do something to change it and become better and not have this pain or this itch or this whatever has been nagging me for most of my life?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different ways of breaking down emotional intelligence. But let's assume that you have a 3 or 4 quadrant model. Okay. And those quadrants can be called life pursuits. And in 6 seconds, we like to call them know, choose, and give yourself. Mm-hmm. Okay. So your self-awareness, your self-management, your self-direction. Your self-awareness talks about how well you are walking through the world.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recognize pattern for yourself and for other people? Do you have emotional literacy? Can you speak the language of emotion, which means a variety of feeling words? Can you see small and large emotions in yourself and in other people?
Yeah, that's huge. You know, the self-awareness piece.
It is huge. What about your self-management, where you do consequential thinking and navigating your emotions?
Yeah.
And your intrinsic motivation. Are you extrinsically motivated or intrinsically motivated? What's your level of optimism when you get up in the morning? Is the sun shining or is it raining every day for you?
And sometimes when it's raining, that's not a bad thing. Rain's good.
And in your self-direction, what's your empathy level? Do you know how to show empathy to other people versus showing sympathy? Brené Brown does a great video that we should say so people can watch it, is Empathy versus Sympathy. Brené Brown, you can see it on YouTube. And one of the things that this little cartoon that's about 3 minutes long does, at the end, the way she describes empathy when you're sitting with somebody else is, "Whoa, I don't even know what to say right now. Is it okay if I just sit with you?"
Yeah.
That's understanding the different kinds of things that are going on inside of you. Or do you want to try to fix it?
Right.
Do you want to silver line everything?
Jim, it's so funny you say that, because it was a year ago yesterday that the East Troublesome Fire came through where I lived. And it was the second fastest fire in U.S. history. And it took out 198,000 acres, most of those overnight. And our house was in the path. Now, our house was spared. 28 of our neighbors lost their homes. But when we evacuated that night, we could see the fire. And we're on one road that there's one road in and out. And we could see the fire approaching. And there was a time when my husband and I were thinking, are we going to make it? You know, that's kind of heavy. That's a traumatic experience. I mean, when we were fine. But as soon as, like, within a day or two, people were like, oh, well, you should just be grateful because you're okay. And it's like, we are grateful that we're okay. And it was still a scary experience. It was, you know, but it's like, let's just make that go away. We don't want to deal with that. You know what I mean?
So what you were just talking about is projection.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, they're sitting there telling you how you should feel. They don't know how you feel.
Nobody asked. Or few people did.
So if I was listening to that story, which I just was, and I would say something like, I can't even imagine how that felt for you.
Yeah.
Because I can't.
No.
It must have been horrifically scary. But yeah. I don't know what it meant to you and your husband. You know, how do I know that you're not suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome?
Yeah. And some people in our community are.
So for us to walk around and say, you should feel this way, that's not emotional intelligence.
No. What do you think leads people? Because I didn't feel like any of it was from a place of bad intent. What do you think leads people to do that?
Well, it could be a couple of different reasons. And obviously, I don't know what leads everybody to do that.
Right.
But a couple of different reasons might be people want to fix things.
Yeah.
We're human beings are wired to try to fix things.
Mm-hmm.
Another possibility might be that people just want to be smart. They just want to have the answers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling better. I'm alive. You should be too.
Yeah. You know, and we don't know. But I think there's also sometimes a level of discomfort when someone is sharing something that's uncomfortable. And we want to help, we want to help make it go away. And we can't, some things we can't make go away.
So scientific research has shown that if we know how to make space for people to step into, helps them more than anything else we could do.
Ooh, tell me more about what that means. I think I know, but tell me more.
Well, if you are a person that's trying to fix somebody else that's feeling bad, you're not going to be able to help them. If you make space for them to step into, that would mean that you're giving them the opportunity to speak their truth.
Yeah.
And people don't have that very often. People don't feel safe enough to speak their truth. Women more than men, by the way.
Really?
Women have been persecuted for a very long time in many ways. And they don't feel safe speaking in a general population. They may feel safe talking to other women or in women's groups, but in a general population where it's mixed with men and women, they don't feel safe enough to speak all the time.
Wow. Especially the deeper level, the truth.
The truth.
Yeah.
And to make space for somebody to step into means that you have to very much be present.
Yes. And you have to really have that intention to be present.
You do. You can't go like this. Oh, look at that. There's a bird.
Let me check my phone. What's going on social media? You know, what's sad about this is in the workshops I teach, you know, we talk about communication and I always pose the question, how important is listening? And I, you know, I've never had less than on a scale of 1 to 10, I've never had less than a 9, you know, and usually people say 13, 14, you know, so we all say listening is so important. And then I pose the question, how many really good listeners are in your life? And then the silence comes over the group. And maybe some people will have one or two, but most people are like, I have no one, no one who really listens deeply. And that to me is sad because listening's free.
Everybody wants to be able to tell their story.
Yes.
So you're talking to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let me give you an example. You're talking to me and you're saying, I do this and this, and I ask people out there, what's it feel like to be listened to or whatever? And I could look at you and I could say, yeah, that's nothing. You should have seen when I...
The one upper.
That's not active listening.
No, but there's a lot of that out there, isn't there?
There is. I have done a lot of things in my life. I'm almost 70 years old. I've had a very, 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 very rich life. I'm so very thankful for it. But I've also learned something. It doesn't really matter if I share everything that I've ever done with every person I talk to. They don't really want to hear it. They don't need to hear it.
Yeah.
Am I the kind of person that's going to listen to you, or am I the kind of person that's going to tell you how great I am?
Wow. Because most people aren't interested. I've heard it said this way. Most people are interested in their own pictures, not yours.
And that's okay.
That's okay.
Active listening is about being interested in their pictures with them.
That's right. Oh, I love that. I love that. Let me make a note. Interested in their pictures. Love it. And there's something I wanted to go back to, Jim, because I think this is important. A while ago, you touched on optimism. And I happen to think optimism is, I think it's really important. And I think there's a lot of confusion about optimism being, you know, well, you're a Pollyanna or you're not seeing reality. I guess, how do you define optimism? What does it mean to you?
To be able to get up in the morning and know that you can go about your life in the best way possible.
Yeah.
And there's going to be different levels of optimism for each person. And they may not define optimism like I do. You know, when I'm debriefing people, sometimes I say some people are so optimistic that they can get up on stage with Annie and sing The Sun Will Come Up Tomorrow. You know, and the truth is they are that optimistic. The world is beautiful for them. There's other people that look at it from a more logical way, from a more through a clouded glass way.
Yeah.
But I think it bears mentioning right now. And we have evidence of this with the State of the Heart report at 6 seconds, that the pandemic is taking a toll.
On optimism.
On everything. Yeah. But optimism, yes. And it's not just in the United States, it's across the world.
Yeah. I remember reading that report, and you know it way better than I did. It seemed like with some of the younger folks, that's where they really took a hit on optimism. That's surprising.
If you were 20 years old and you were listening to all the confusion, and I'm not taking a side here, okay?
Right.
I'm not going one way or the other. But if you were listening to all the confusion in our government right now, and you were a young person, what would you think?
You were born at the wrong time.
What would you feel?
Yeah, you wouldn't feel optimistic.
The word might be hopeless.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I was sad when I saw that statistic, when I saw that in the report, I mean.
Yes, and I'm talking to a lot of these people, and they aren't looking forward to anything. They're just trying to make it from day to day.
Man, that's sad. That's really sad.
We're in a transition emotionally in our society.
Man, how does optimism relate to finding more options, more choices in our lives?
I think you just said it.
I think it's huge, but I wanted to see what you thought.
I think optimism gives us the ability to see that there is more than one lane to go down. And what you're talking about, less optimistic people are very dualistic. And dualism means that there's up and down, in and out, black and white.
Okay.
Really optimistic people are non-dualistic. So that means that more than one truth can exist in the same space at the same time together.
Yeah, right.
And that means, oh, I can do this. I can do that. I can do this. Maybe I can do both of those things.
Wow. Yeah, I think, and I don't know, for me, it's like when I see more options, then I feel more optimistic. It's almost like an upward spiral there.
Yeah, but you might not even need those options to feel optimistic. You can see them. You know that they're there. That means that the world's cruising along in the way it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So shifting gears a little bit, because we're kind of talking about it, so it's related, but how can emotional intelligence help individuals or businesses through something, you know, like the pandemic, where, you know, times of challenge, crisis, change, that type of thing?
Well, that is a compound question.
I know it is.
So do you want me to handle business or people?
Let's go with people first.
Emotional intelligence, because it makes you aware, helps you to be able to make the best choices for yourself at the time. If emotional intelligence is not active, people can be very excited. Let me say why. So a little bit of neuroscience, and I'm sure the neuroscientists that are listening to us might disagree with me because I might say something wrong, and I'm sorry. But the amygdala is that gland in the brain that remembers most of the bad things that have happened to you in your life. So it helps you to fight, to flee, to freeze, or to flock, and helps save your life. It lets you know that something bad is happening, and it happens in a tenth of a second. Emotional intelligence helps us to regulate that so we don't overreact to every single thing that happens to us and look at it as something bad getting ready to happen.
So are you saying, I just want to make sure I'm tracking in this. Are you saying that because of the amygdala, like something happens and our past experiences are kind of filtering how we might feel about the thing happening in the present?
And we bypass our logical brain. And so what happens when we bypass the logical brain? What kind of decisions do we make? What kind of interpretation do we have for people that are being around us and they're emotional or they're whatever? How optimistic do we feel if we're in a hijacked state?
Right. Not very.
And so how you can stop that, and emotional intelligence helps you, is to kick in your logical brain, overriding the amygdala, so your brain isn't hijacked.
Right.
And we do that by thinking of something logically. My wife, when she gets irritated with me, likes to say the seven dwarfs in order, which takes 6 seconds.
Oh, okay.
And it helps all those chemicals, hormones, and peptides to subside.
Right.
And then you get back to a level place.
Right. Because 6 seconds is, do you want to like tell the significance of the 6 seconds?
Well, 6 seconds is the name of the company that I am presently working for, which is an international nonprofit dedicated to the science of emotional intelligence.
Yeah. And what does it take? 6 seconds to feel the emotion, the chemicals leave the...
It helps you to subside all that flood of chemicals.
Nice.
Are they completely gone? No. But it helps you to engage the thinking brain to be able to do the things that you need to do and function.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Well, you get out of control when your amygdala takes over completely because you're stressed. Intentionally, your body does that, and it helps you to get ready to run away, to flee the mastodon.
Yeah, even when we're not facing that, you know. That's why I was watching one of the videos with Josh today, as a matter of fact, and it was, you know, he was talking about what? Feel, think, act.
Think, feel, act.
Yeah. I love that.
We even have a set of cards that are about think, feel, act. So what that means, let's assume that you have a problem with somebody. Okay. And you're thinking about that problem. And let's say they stole your cookie. I'm trying to make it real simple.
That's a good example. So don't take my cookie.
Yeah, me too. You're thinking they stole my cookie. What are you feeling? Well, I was betrayed. Okay. Mm-hmm. What's the action? I'm going to steal their cookie or beat them up.
Right.
So what the cards do and what the process does, because it's an algorithm that we put together, it's very simple. Change any one of those things, change it, and the other two will change.
Ooh. Okay, so using this cookie example, how would you change one?
So think about the act part. Do you really want to punch them?
Is it a chocolate chip cookie or a peanut butter cookie? I'm joking.
All right. So what would be an action that you could take that would defuse the situation?
Yeah. You could talk to them about it.
You could go and ask them a question like, were you the one that took my cookie?
Yeah. Maybe they were hungry.
Or maybe they didn't take it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that as a way to kind of, I don't know, tap the brakes and be a little bit more intentional. Like you said, bring the logical brain back in.
Right. And so think, feel, act. Wonderful way of getting through your emotional turmoil.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. Now, have you always, did emotional intelligence always come easy for you?
No.
Tell me about that.
Well, I think that's actually very funny. The Enneagram, are you familiar with that?
A little bit.
I've been doing, because I'm in spiritual direction, I've been doing
Enneagram
for a long time. And it's an ancient personality type indicator that's fairly accurate. I mean, obviously, you can't agree with everything, but it's fairly accurate. And I'm an 8 on the Enneagram, which is a challenger.
So
I'd go straight to anger in about a tenth of a second. And then a tenth of a second later, I was done. And the people that I got angry with stayed mad for 3 days. And I'm going, what? What are you mad about?
It's over.
It was over a long time ago.
Funny how that happens, though, right?
It is. And that was not emotional intelligence. I learned that I had some issues. I learned that I was angry about a bunch of different things. And I knew that I wanted to fix it. I wasn't being the best me that I could be.
That's a tough feeling when you have that feeling.
Yeah. And I hurt people.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to hurt people. That's not my basic nature.
Right. I think we shared that a little bit. When I was like in my 20s, I realized like I was a horrible communicator. I learned my mom was my role model in that regard. And she could be extremely aggressive. And one day I'm like, is this really who I am? You know, and it was like, no, I don't want to be this way. And that was painful.
Well, you're doing a great job communicating now.
Well, thank you. You know, 30 some years later and a lot of work. But I think that gets to when we have that awareness, like with you, when you have that kind of awareness, you can make a change. Or you can choose not to. You're absolutely right.
And think about everything that everybody's going through right now.
Yeah.
There's people out there that think we're under 6 major crises in our society of different kinds.
Yeah.
And if that's true, which I don't know if it's true or not, but if it's true, what do you do for people if you are more emotionally intelligent and you're working with people that are just out of hope? You help?
Yeah. So Jim, with that, if you're working with someone or if someone's listening and they feel like they're out of hope, what is the help?
The help is to continually ask questions. Let people engage their own brain. Don't try to fix them.
Yeah.
Just keep going back to that. Ask questions. What is it that you need right now? Do we have time to talk about leaders?
Absolutely.
So I want to just touch on that briefly. Jim Collins, who wrote the book called Good to Great many years ago, and I used it as a very good handbook for many years, was trying to interview what made good leaders. And he interviewed some very, very, very large companies and some small companies. And he came up with a scale from 1 to 5. And there's level 1 leaders and there's level 5 leaders. Now, level 1, 2, and 3 leaders are people that are just learning how to be leaders, so we don't need to talk about them. But level 4 leaders are people that were able to single-handedly drag their business behind them and grow it that way. And they were very, very, very rigid, very, very, very strong-willed, very, very able to grow something, but they did it at the expense of everybody around them.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what level 5 leaders were people that were still able to be strong leaders, still able to help people grow the business, still wanted the business to grow, but they loved their people.
Yeah.
They showed them that they loved them. They showed them by the way they acted. They showed them by what they gave them. They were in touch with their emotions. And because of that, the companies that had level 5 leaders are endearing companies.
Yeah. And when you say, you know, loved their people, because some people think, ooh, you know, HR, we don't want to, you know, what does that mean to love your people as a leader?
Loving your people is not obviously, the way that you're saying it. It's not a sexual kind of love.
Yeah, obviously.
It's a love that sees them as human beings.
Yeah.
And the sacredness even of their own journeys and admitting it, acknowledging it, and supporting it.
Yeah, that's powerful.
It is.
How many level five leaders did he uncover?
Not very many.
No.
There's not very many level five leaders because sometimes, and I think this word that I'm abused is being overused right now, but I'll say it anyway, positionality. So some leaders think that they have a right to all the money they're making and their position and their power and their other things. And they don't really take into consideration the emotional impact that has on everybody around them. The level five leaders understand their positionality and they use it for the greater good.
Yeah.
And you do that through emotional intelligence. You can show up to any job being technically okay. Mm-hmm. You can do a job if you're trained and you're reasonably intelligent. What most people are hoping is when you show up to the job, do you see me?
That's right. Do you see me?
Yes. Do you see me? Am I valuable? Am I worth something?
Yeah. It's so, on one hand, it's so simple, you know, and yet I've worked with I think it can be hard to implement for some reason, you know.
So let me ask you a question.
Okay.
What do you think the reason would be that it would be hard to implement?
I think part of it is you're making yourself kind of vulnerable as the leader, you know, because you're revealing your heart by doing that. You know, and in that least is the first thing that comes to mind for me. If I'm in the weeds, you can tell me.
I actually agree with you. But here's a little secret. Level four leaders, people could see them just as well as level five leaders. You're not hiding from anybody.
You're not hiding. No, the truth is always there.
It is.
Wow. So if someone's out there, they're leading a team and they really want to take, you know, up their game. They want to go to a level five leader. If you had a couple pieces of insight or advice for them, what would that be?
You've heard me say it three times already. Ask questions. Don't assume. One size does not fit all.
Man, it does not. We make a lot of assumptions too, as we go about our day.
We do. We assume that people are X, Y, and Z, when in reality, they may be A, B, and C.
Yeah.
And take time to listen.
Yeah.
A level five leader spends most of his or her time with the troops. And the troops may be their direct reports so they can help inspire them to inspire their direct reports and so forth.
Yeah. And I even think about a leader, like is what we're talking about here, you know, a leader in your family, a leader in your community, a leader. There's so many ways that people can be leaders. And this is like, to me, just a fundamental human need for that sort of love as you're describing it.
Yes.
So, Jim, you have said a few times, ask questions, ask more questions. And that's a big thing for me, too. Some people, I can drive them nuts with it, you know, but that's okay. Why is asking questions such a powerful thing, in your opinion?
I'm a professional certified coach.
Yep.
And I'm going for my master certified coach. And one of the things that's drilled into us as coaches, ask questions, period. Because in coaching, if you're really, 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 really trying to help somebody, you really don't know what's going on with them. But if you want to help them, ask questions and tie the questions together.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a powerful thing.
It is. And people will be grateful because they do want time to trust you and they do want to be able to get things off their chests.
Yeah. And that goes back to that space that you were talking about earlier.
There are going to be people that disagree with me about this. I've seen too much evidence across the world and working with 6 seconds that this is a truth.
Yeah.
I've talked to too many people across the world that this is a truth.
How many people across the world do you think I'm just curious about this.
Thousands.
Yeah. So it's not something that's just in the US. It's not something that's gender specific. It's humans.
Right.
Nice.
Humans are in the emotional department. We basically are pretty much the same.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Jim, there's one thing I wanted to ask you about too. It occurred to me after we shifted to a new topic. If someone is out there, kind of like you or me from the past, where we're like, ooh, I want to change this. Like I need to work on my emotional intelligence. What pieces of advice would you offer them to get started?
So emotional intelligence is a practice. first of all. It's sort of
I
like
love that.
If you're doing yoga or swimming on a swim team or golfing or anything, you have to practice to be good at it. Mm-hmm. Emotional intelligence doesn't come easily to us, even though we're hardwired to understand it. So practice is the first thing. And if you're looking for resources, 6seconds.org has a library and so many resources that you can find information on anything that you're looking for.
And it is amazing.
Seconds, and 6 seconds is a number six, not the word six.
Yeah.
.org.
The resources are amazing. I mean, there are hundreds, it seems like hundreds of resources there.
Actually, it's in the thousands now.
Wow. That's amazing. There's videos, there's great articles, they're short, they're digestible. But I love what you said. It is a practice.
It is a practice.
And anything you can practice, to me, you can get better at.
Well, you will get better at it because things will start to occur to you. You'll start to see things differently and you'll be excited and move forward.
Yeah.
We just finished a class called EQPC, which is the practitioner certification. And so what happened is that you have all these people to get together in the beginning, mm-hmm. and they're all just sort of quiet. They're all watching each other. They're all waiting to see what the other person's going to do. And at the end of our 3 days of training and going through exercises, because 6 seconds doesn't lecture, 6 seconds does integrative training and learning. And at the end of the 3 days, these people are crying and hugging each other and saying, "You're my best friend and I don't want to ever leave you," because they were sharing deeply, profoundly, and appropriately. And that's emotional intelligence at work.
Yeah. And it seems like we have so few places where we get to do that anymore.
And it's getting less.
And it's getting less. Yeah. Especially with COVID, you know. Wow. That's awesome. I've loved this. Anything that I should have asked you that I haven't?
No, I think we covered the gamut.
Okay. Well, Jim, if someone wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to reach out to you and learn what you're doing?
jim.vave@6seconds.org.
Perfect. I'll put that in the show notes. I'll put that, the 6 seconds link in there, the thing with Brene Brown. I'll make sure we get all that in the show notes. I just want to thank you so much. This has been just awesome. And you know what I love about it too? You're so practical in your approach to it. And you come from such a place of deep experience.
Well, I do want to say one other thing too. I will be more than happy to help anybody that wants to get in touch with me. And you don't need to buy a thing for me to help you.
Nice. That is perfect. So they can reach out and you guys can take it from there.
Yep. It's all about helping.
Yeah. I love that. So, well, Jim, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Great. Thank you for having me.
I love how approachable and down to earth Jim makes the practice of EQ. I also love how he framed it that way, that emotional intelligence is a practice. I had so many takeaways from that conversation, and I hope that you did as well. Here are my 3 insights for thriving. Number 1, trauma that is not transformed is trauma that is transferred. That comes from his 30 years working in prisons and with death row inmates. When he said that, the truth of it, it just hit me in the heart. We carry trauma with us, and it affects us. And therefore, it affects those around us. I love how he connected that to emotional intelligence and specifically awareness. We cannot change anything without awareness. Number 2, create the space for others to share their story and their truth. Jim said that this is one of the most powerful and beneficial things that we can do for another person. We can ask them questions. We can be curious. We can help them to tell their story. And then, of course, we listen. And here, we aren't listening to respond. And we're not listening to share how our story is bigger or better. But we're listening to really honor them and show that we care. I love how Jim put it. Active listening is being interested in their pictures and the stories behind their pictures. This was one of my driving motivations behind starting this podcast, because I believe we all have such amazing stories to share and we can learn so much from each other. And finally, number 3, when Jim was talking about level 5 leaders, I couldn't help but wonder how amazing our families, our communities, our schools, our workplaces could be if we all did our best to be that level 5 leader. the type of leader who gives others the gift of really seeing them, of really hearing them, of really understanding who they are and what they value. Jim had three tips on how we could be that level five leader. Number one, ask questions. I have to add that to that because one time my husband Rick and I were talking about this and he said, you know, we ask the questions not just to learn the answers. We ask the questions to show we care. Think about that. When people ask you questions and they're genuinely, genuinely curious, don't you feel like they care about you as a person? The second step that Jim mentioned, don't assume, right? Even though it's human nature. But what we can do is start to notice our assumptions. And at the very, very least, we can begin to question the assumptions or put them aside. And step number three, stop. Be present and take the time to listen. How much better could our relationships be with those three simple and absolutely free steps? I hope that you found a great mix of insight and practical things that you can put into play for yourself. If you did, maybe you'd pause for just a second and think about who you know that could benefit from hearing this episode of the podcast. If someone comes to mind, please consider sharing it with them. And who knows, maybe you'll help them to have a better day, a better week, or maybe even a better life. That's why I do this. Thanks again for tuning into the Unyielded podcast. And as you go about your week, make sure that you thrive no matter what.